Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run, where we tell you something that we don't tell you. Point of correction. Pardon my limited vocabulary in the English language on that one. That is but puts it in a very better way that what's that thing where we cover topics that you did not know that you needed to hear until you do.
Like today.
Yeah, like today. And it's a Monday, Dwight's favorite day. Not my favorite. My favorite is still Friday.
I still like Mondays almost.
I know, still Friday.
You know, look at this wonderful Monday weather, you know, clouds in the sky. Uh-huh. It's not as baking hot as last Friday. Your Friday and Thursday was baking.
Yeah.
It was cooking. Do you remember when you asked me, do I feel okay? That literally is the lethargy. Okay. It's literally when the heat and when there's humidity. You know, some Africans might say, you know, that they don't subscribe to the same particular kind of anatomy that an African like me subscribes to. I don't care, guys. But there are some days in the year, you know, when
the kind that uses sunscreen?
No. Yeah, the kind that uses sunscreen, yes. Well, sometimes I don't need sunscreen. Most of the time I don't need sunscreen.
Ah, okay.
Just a hat and water, you know, like any other plant.
Okay, yeah. You're becoming a little better than me, and that's not fair.
Yeah, so when it comes to like these particular days, you know, the spring days, because it's October, spring-ish, obviously we've got the anomaly of this weird weather for today, but anyone else would probably tell you, yeah, there's some sort of low system, high system situations happening. I still have to grasp my head around the low system, high system situations. At least now I know that they are supposedly rivers of the sky. What was that term they used? Yeah, rivers of the sky.
That's an interesting way of describing it.
No, the rivers of the sky is if you've got an unusual amount of rainfall in a specific time frame in a small window.
Oh, I thought it refers to the movement of air, hot and warm.
That plays a role to this rivers of the sky situation because it's primarily how the small water molecules that make up your clouds get transported across the world, or how they. And when I say across the world, so you look at all particular continents and then you try to establish where they get most of their rainfall from during their rainy seasons or their wet seasons, as it would be called.
Yeah.
Now, I actually didn't want to detract far from that, but that feeling that I felt on Thursday and Friday, you know, that lethargy where I was like, yo, why does it seem like the whole sun heat discussion here in Windhoek is against my very existence. And technically, Helmut, if you compare today's particular feeling of the weather right now today, right now at this moment, versus the same time frame last Friday and Thursday, this is a walk in the park. I mean, this is a run in the park. This is wonderful weather. You know, this is, I almost said bikini weather, but yeah, you're close to that. Not that I'm going to be wearing bikinis.
I don't have money for therapy, you know?
So yeah, besides the meteorological conversation we've got there, welcome dear listeners, good afternoon, or let me just say hello since Helmut opened it up already for us. So yeah, it's wonderful weather, Helmut, and today's topic alongside the weather discussion obviously is just one of those particular keen talking points. I'll actually share a fun statistic later on, Helmut, but let me first, you know, hand the floor back to you.
Yeah. Today's discussion is based on the event that took place late last month and then ended beginning this month. It started on the 29th of September and ended on the 2nd of October in Johannesburg, South Africa, where ministers all across, you know, and basically, you know, a lot of stakeholders, interested, you know, parties met in Johannesburg, South Africa to discuss Africa's, you know, way forward with regards to, you know, with regards to financing. And We know, and we have covered this before, and yeah, we basically know that Africa is the African Union. So funding ability is somewhat questionable itself overall. And it's now, and then we, like a sort of like a, the discussion now, you know, the discussion of funding on the African continent. Of course, funding overall, you know, is needed for a lot of, you know, for a lot of projects, you know, spreading across agriculture, you know, education and all, especially health. Mm. Now, the one for health is the one that we're going to talk about today, because that's the one that took place in, you know, that's now the one that was held in Johannesburg, South Africa. That was the 8th session of the Specialized Technical Committee on Finance, Monetary Affairs, Economic Planning and Integration, focusing on financing for health across the continent.
Mm.
Yeah. It turns out, you know, in the very same way that we learned, was that late last month or earlier this year, this month, that funding is required for a lot of things, basically for everything.
Mm.
Now, one, you know, well, for all agricultural projects, funding is required. For all, you know, military projects and everything, even though military is not the direction that we want to prioritize in terms of financing, even though that's, you know, that both local and global is receiving a lot, you know, a large chunk of, you know, of national budgets. Now, when it comes to health, it's very, you begin to realize why it must really be a priority. In the very same way that we talked about, you know, skills development and the need for to increase financing in education, because if you want to run industries, you want trained people to run these industries, and your Ministry of Education, that's your factory for all the skills that's required in this industry.
Yeah.
So you need to dedicate a lot of funding to that sector. Now, for them to sit in class and focus, they need to eat. That's where the Ministry of Agriculture comes in. And again, another financing.
With education.
With education. Because you don't want to, you know, take broccoli to people that don't. Now,
let's leave the broccoli eating people or the broccoli growing people.
Homeboy did one heck of an experiment on that one. And look, it's a very brilliant idea. Now, at this point,
what
I think,
not to grow and what to grow.
Not just that, like, the methods that he used to rehabilitate that land.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could come in very handy, especially when it comes to, you know, because, for a very long time, we were into shifting cultivation because they were, you know, the population was not that big. But, for all the industrial and economic goals that we have in the future, a large number of people are expected, and the, you know, population growth projections are, you know, are being made left, right, and center. So the population is basically headed north. And that's because, well, in a sense that it's growing. Mm. It's going, you know, it's going to increase with time. Although,
You shouldn't say like heading north, because many listeners would have thought that you were saying, are people now getting in their cars and driving like right now?
Okay.
Mass exodus to the north? What happened?
Here's the thing. I feel like, there is a student somewhere. In school.
Who will cite you?
Yeah.
Who will quote you on that statement?
Yeah, that
there's a there's a mass migration movement from Windhoek to the
migration of the, you know, of broke people.
Technically that does take place, you know, every end of the year wedding season situation.
You should have seen that, you know, in the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, people are running.
Yeah. There was a serious exodus of people. Now, the discussion that was held in Johannesburg was based primarily on African, you know, African countries funding their own, you know, from, you know, from research and development to production of pharmaceutical products to distribution, or basically controlling everything they can. But that's going to take a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like a long time. For one, you don't have to be an expert to know that, equipments used in the pharmaceutical industry, like every industry, you need equipments to run a pharmaceutical industry. Mm. From production all the way to equipments that are used by doctors in the hospital. Now, the thing is, to make them, one very simple stumbling block, I don't want to start with stumbling block, you have to navigate a lot of copyright issues.
Yeah.
But we're going to get to that in a few. So now, a lot of things were basically pointed out as, basically three things that was looked at is, where we are in terms of financing for health as, as a continent. And the gentleman from the African Development, Africa, is it African Development Bank, referenced the COVID-19 pandemic a lot. Afri-Exim Bank, yeah. Afri-Exim Bank. And now the lady from the United Nations, poked a few holes into more like she basically pointed out what a lot of us don't want to talk about in terms of financing for our own projects. Offshore havens.
Yeah. I mean, okay, Hamoud.
And I've seen the Panama paper. They have a Wikipedia page. Every time I want to understand why there's financing problems on the African continent, I just go to that and scroll through a bunch of loaded Africans. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, okay. Look. Loaded Africans aside, which are critical because you have to, you have to establish where they get their money from. Loaded Africans aside and Panama papers, secondarily also aside, even though you need to understand the level of double standards in terms of people talking cheap on the one side and then ultimately not literally adhering to the same rules that are applied for all of us, meaning, you know, some animals deciding on the animal farm which animals are important, which are not. So you also get that scenario, animal farm situation.
Yeah.
But at the heart of the conversation, like you, okay, that lady established one particular talking point. And the unfortunate thing is, Hamoud, I'm really sorry because I'm slightly of the opinion.
Yeah.
From having seen, watched the documentary, The Spider's Web, which was written by the journalist and the economist and the other guy, the economist, regarding Britain's offshore haven status as well.
Yeah.
And how its financial system relies on this offshore haven system.
And how a lot of questionable transactions are taking place.
Not just the transactions, the transactions associated with a lot of questionable people.
Yeah.
Obviously how that plays itself in the global financial system of the world. That's also one of the reasons as to why the Namibian government now wants to align a lot more with the UN. We signed that UN agency in terms of the ESG standards associated to pension funds and the financial system of and the taxation systems of the world. That's why we had that discussion the other day about the global tax order, where the policymakers at the UN level are now trying to establish this single point platform which influences everyone's taxation systems around the world.
Some kind of a universal tax system?
Yeah, because if you've got the same, if you subscribe to the same universal human rights declaration,
yeah,
then you can obviously see that, hence the reason why you've got the UN at the core in terms of that. Any particular developments that stem from that have to be implemented as by you as a member country.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we are seeing a lot of, there are few agencies that Namibia is not party to. There's a few platforms that Namibia clearly still has to develop or capacitate itself to subscribe in that neighborhood or to that membership system. For example, like today I came back from the Space Week, discussion held here, that was held in Windhoek. This first week of October, Helmut is supposedly like World Space Week celebrations. It's a specific, remember that discussion on the outer space usage, the international engagement that took place,
the one that HD kept asking, are you sure this number is correct?
Yeah, and I kept saying, was it 7,000 or was it 700? The 700th meeting.
I'm not sure if it was 700 or 7,000, but I remember it clearly because
it was a massive number.
Yeah, it was a massive number. I actually looked at it when we sent in a description for a post. I went like,
"Are you sure
there is not a type? There is no type here."
Yeah, like, and I had to like say yes. I had to make sure that this number is literally, this has been the amount of meetings they've had around
this subject,
on the subject of outer space usage by UN member states. So I did not know that Namibia is not a signatory to that particular discussion. Namibia is apparently in the pipeline. trying to capacitate certain particular aspects in order for them to try and subscribe in future to that outer space discussion. Remember the guy that opened up the meeting at that discussion was, or was it the nuclear discussion? The guy that was from Africa. I don't know if it was the outer space or the nuclear,
a peaceful application of nuclear.
Yeah. No. I think it was the outer space guys. Yeah, the outer space guys were the one that had the African chair from one of the African Union member states.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously you can see in this scenario, there are various things that Namibia has to subscribe to. So, when you get to this.
But that makes a lot of sense. Space programs are insanely expensive.
But space programs yield so many benefits.
Yeah, it does.
Economically specific.
We're talking about money.
And one of the weirdest things that I've sat here, and when I sat through those discussions, okay, those were the speeches and some of the, and the panel discussion, I sat there thinking, specifically we Namibians, we have so many sectors, Helmut, that are just, you can think of them as virgin sectors. I'm sorry for the word. I'm sorry, guys, for the word, but think of it literally in Namibia's context. We've got so many sectors that are just lying dormant there. Do you know that? And this was only unveiled, also mentioned today. Apparently, the Space Science Council of Namibia, which I wrote about and which I saw the unveiling of 2 years back in 2023, the Space Science Council has been approached for space tourism. They've been approached for space tourism.
Space what now?
Space Science Council. We've got a Space Science Council.
Uh-huh.
I wrote about it in the e-paper 2 years back, 2023, when the current one.
I think those are the guys I didn't run to the showgrounds. Everyone else I ran into, pretty much all of them.
No, but these guys, one is from the security cluster, one member. One member is a legal representative. One member is from the ICT. One member is, has to be a physicist or some sort of a scientist role. And then the lot there, cause there are five of them. And another one is, oh my goodness, how could I forget that one member. But yeah, they're like five members of them. And the Space Science Council, are associated to NCRST. They do not work for the NCRST, but they are associated in guiding, you know, scientific aspects, that obviously fall within the mandate of NCRST, which could be research and development as well. And they also have a dual function where they report to the ministry. Back then it would have been the ministry of, no, this was last year, not 2 years back. This was last year, 2024, yeah. They would have reported to the Ministry of Higher Education. But now obviously they've got to report to the Ministry of, the Super Ministry of MASAC. Because innovation obviously is in there, and innovation is in there. So they've got a report to that ministry now. Plus there's also that they're going to be developing the said necessary legislation. Now, I'm sorry, dear listeners, for taking you guys way off track with our discussion on health financing and, you know, the particular concerned conversation that took place on the AU. On the AU level. But it's a similar discussion, Helmut, that sort of like mirrors this AU health financing. Ignoring the Space Science Council discussion for now. Just taking the word science itself. What was the biggest issue during the COVID pandemic with the African continent?
Vaccines.
But why, Helmut? We couldn't make our own, right?
Yeah, because you needed, again...
No, but even before you get there to the you needed,
yeah,
we could not make our own because we were not serious enough to develop a sector that is critical to human health,
yeah,
critical in that it plays as a critical manufacturing component to your country's industrialization program. The secondary thing is also that it also points to a lot of innovation that you can actually leverage in your economy.
There are two things that the COVID-19 pandemic, at least the COVID-19 pandemic, let me just say there are two lessons that the COVID-19 pandemic and the Donald Trump's withdrawal of a lot of funding from a lot of United Nations projects operating worldwide, especially, was that UNICEF. There are two lessons that that I think these two events I hope taught us. It wasn't until the COVID-19 popped up that's when we started scrambling trying to invest in health into pretty much anything research and development, which takes decades. And basically everything health related. That's when we started now trying to talk about let's invest in health. And now the pulling of funding from a lot of international aid organizations is predominantly funded by the U.S. Donald Trump basically pulling funding away from this organization made a lot of people, especially from developing countries, go, why would you do something like this? The question is, seriously, now this is just me asking, for how long did we expect that to go on?
The what specifically?
The funding coming from aid organizations.
The funding, Hamun, is also a...
Like, did we expect, like, to be, what, spoon-fed forever?
Okay, this is now where the promise that I made at the start of the discussion about a funny statistic I wanted to share with
you
pops up. So I try to understand, Hamun, because I try to understand something in terms of this conversation, what is the most adequate level of spending that a government has to apply to its health sector every financial year.
Similar to the one on education about spending at least 15 to 20% of.
But at least you and I knew that came from a UNESCO perspective, right? And Namibia is halfway to the desired level of 20%. But Namibia is at an adequate level because we're at least above the what has been perceived as the smallest or minimum rate of 5%, right? Because we were at 9 point something.
Yeah, 9 point something.
When it comes to the health sector, okay, so obviously, like, you do know what even Google does. Google sort of like throws its AI response at the top
first
of
it. First and then websites.
Yeah, and then you have to look at it. So that particular Google search itself literally reinforced the AI response that was given to me, that literally there is no adequate indicator of what is the best percentage of to GDP expenditure that a government should implement in its country for its health sector. Firstly, this speaks volumes, Helmut, because obviously it means that either the multilateral agencies like the World Bank, the IMF, the World Health Organization are all afraid of comparing a pear to an apple or a banana to an orange or, a peanut to an almond nut, they are afraid of doing that. Or the setting is one where they actively know this would obviously show the glaring reality of if you've got certain things in place, you have the leeway to spend X percentages on your health sector, whether it's public, whether it's, and there's another term that the World Health uses for private medical aid or private medical care. Maybe. Out of pocket. Meaning you pay.
I hate that.
You pay out of your pocket directly. But out of pocket can be applied to you walking to the shop and buying a liter of milk. Out of pocket can be you buying airtime every day, which is out of pocket as well.
Okay, so in this case, out of pocket is mostly referred to you taking the private side of health instead of going for the public one.
Yeah. Because in the
public one,
it is perceived, that the perception is obviously since it is free, it is obviously open to everyone, which is a positive reaffirmation. It's not a perception, but the downside is people forget that in the public health one is probably the slowest to respond to helping you with your immediate emergency.
Yep.
The out of pocket one. Helmut, I walked in. There was no discrimination of, yes, if you're not a baby or if you're not an elderly person, you will not be helped. No. I was just told, listen, just wait there. What's your ailment? Okay, I've got this chipped tooth. It's killing me. It's my half of my face is on fire with pain. No, just sit down. It'll cost you this much. Do you have this money? I said, yes, I can pay you immediately. And oops, right there.
Done.
I know it broke my bank for the day, but it helped me with my emergency within 30 minutes. Within 30 minutes of that, the tooth was out. I got painkillers for days. I was given a subscription and I was booked off. instead of now having to wake up at 4 a.m. to be there for 6 a.m. opening up, to be told literally, no, we can only take babies, who would be first, and we can only take, and we first help babies, and we first help the elderly, and we only take 20 people a day, and I literally counted 20 elderly, 20 babies before me, which meant that that was their quota for the day at the Karatura State Hospital, and I would have had to come back the next day.
With a toothache.
With, I first would have to go work. I would have come back to work.
Yeah.
Work with that toothache.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, at least the
and
the
then go there and then get the, you know, the healthy teeth removed.
Yeah, the healthy tooth was removed. Yeah. I still feel sorry for that colleague of ours that was here. The healthy, yes, guys, this happened. The healthy tooth was removed and she still had to sit with the same ailment minus a tooth.
ChatGPT doctors. Look, the thing is, look, I think, you know, the comparison is one interesting one, because when you look at it in terms of service provision, especially with, with regards to health and comparing the public and private sector. One thing is, you know, it quickly becomes, a discussion of, of the numbers that you're working with. If you look at the health, I think we did something like this last year. When you look at the number of health, health professionals in the public sector and the number that they have to serve, and you are looking at the health professional to patient ratio is just, is a burden. Now, because of the high prices that comes with the public sector, is it sector or sector? A private sector. Okay, must be sector. Private sector. A sector. Yeah.
Where did you hear of SEFTA?
I don't know. Messi must have had a dream.
Yeah, also, guys, we're making up English here.
I think this is karma. I spend half of my Friday making fun of people who cannot pronounce literary festival. Literary. I don't want to mention the regions. But, the thing is.
Yeah, there's another meme about that. Especially people from Asian countries who have to learn English. And you know when the application wants you to pronounce it like it is pronouncing. The poor lady was struggling with the word, with the phrase, this juice. She was saying, that Jew, that Jewy, that Jewy. Because in certain languages, they don't have TH. They can't pronounce the S. So it sounds like a DID. And they can't read a combination letters like juice. They literally read the letters like juice.
Oh, so it depends on whether or not you have the letters in your language
or the pronunciation.
Yeah, or the pronunciation thereof. Yeah. Now, the discussion of the discussion of ratio is that give. As much as I like to make fun of the public sector, especially both health, especially health and education, you just look at the numbers that they are working with, the number that they have to serve, and it's just, a very massive number. But when you look at the patient to health professional ratio in the private sector, they are not serving a very large number because of the high cost associated with it. So, they can easily just, see you in just a couple of minutes. I was used to, when I first had I got my medical aid. I was used to just waking up and, I have a headache and walked in there. Then one lady looks at me, I think it was the third time I went there, then she started laughing. You've got to learn to make appointments. I'm like, oh, sorry. Where I'm coming from, you just go there and get in the queue. It's an appointment.
Hey, yeah, people have to plan their lives. It's known as business planning.
I know. Turns out now they have to, call, the guy, or more like they have to postpone.
Mm.
Yeah, they have, to postpone the, they basically have to give me a different date to come back. Because for example, the optometrist I'm looking for is not on duty that day.
Mm.
No, he will only be available on this day. Come on this day.
Mm.
And then just, you know, just cruised through the date and then came a different date. So you've got to learn to make appointments. And I'm still practicing. But, the ratio of, you know, health professional or in terms of education, teachers to, you know, teachers to people in the public sector is just, well, it's a little tricky to work with because it's a very large number. But, well, the qualifications are there. Qualifications are there. So you guys are not ChatGPT doctors. So, When it comes to pharmaceutical industry, operating a pharmaceutical industry, more like having a pharmaceutical industry that is fit enough to respond to health, you know, to health crisis or health emergencies like, you know, like COVID-19, where you don't have to rely on international, multinational corporations and international taxpayers, basically first fund their research and development and then, you know, make their own ingredients of what would be the best solution to the bacteria or virus you're suffering from.
Yeah.
They're not going to hand it to you just like that because it took a lot of money and time and research for them to come up with that.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? Start with research and development?
But here's the thing also, Hamoud. The research and development. Okay, let me give you a lovely story. The story obviously stems from the COVID-19 vaccine development once again.
Yeah.
If you go and read on about, you know, the various vaccines that came out that we all heard about, because people love using the term the vaccine.
Yeah.
And if you ask them which one, then, you know, they just sit there blinking their eyes at you. So I'll be honest. I took AstraZeneca, which was literally sort of like in European countries, it later on became like the party joke. Because if you took that vaccine, you were the one that you were literally going through a liberation struggle yourself because the thing was, that cocktail would literally sort you out for like 2 days or 3 days maximum. And then you feel wonderful after that.
No wonder someone said extra Senegal.
What? Extra Senegal for AstraZeneca. So the obvious thing was that the lady who developed this, she developed it.
Yeah.
She literally sat with the data and all the knowledge. She had been developing the AstraZeneca vaccine technically for 20 years before COVID came along. Now I know there's also a lot of us in Namibia that love the conspiracy theory discussions that obviously popped out. Please, guys. That's for, if you look at America, leave Anthony Fauci and America for another discussion. We're looking at the things that happened that we can all focus on and then you can see the positives from this.
Mm-hmm.
This woman works for, I think it's Cambridge or Oxford. Is it Cambridge or Oxford? One of the two universities. She's literally, all she does, her expertise was, she was given funding in the 90s, develop a vaccine for polio. Then while she was doing her research, and this is free on the internet, you guys can read up about it. She was then told, hey, listen, we've got to change your research from polio, change it to malaria. So now she has to use the knowledge she gathered to now flip it around and then look at malaria. And then later on during the course of the 20 years, it kept changing all the knowledge that she had built up.
Mm-hmm.
And she built up this wonderful database of most of the zoonotic diseases in the world. I almost said Namibia. Zoonotic viruses in the world. That literally when the Swedish company AstraZeneca and the English partner, which was another partner of sort of like an aspect of the British government, when they approached her at this university, they told her, hey, listen, could you look at developing a vaccine in response to this? She was like, here's the whole, I looked at everything already here.
Here you have it.
That's why they could literally, obviously many people are still slamming their heads against, you know, the testing period.
That was the big question.
Because, that was obviously the big question. The
clinical trials that usually medicines go through.
Did you want to go through clinical trials for 5 years? Did you want to go through lockdowns for 5 years?
No, I don't think.
Did you want to see your country? Did you want to see your country's economy literally fall into the earth's core? That's how bad our economy would have gone. When people obviously have to look at that, you can understand the urgency with how the researchers had to respond. They have to respond with something that can be rolled out now. It's the same thing. Remember the Howard Hughes example I explained to you last week? The guy that was taken to court by the American senator for the aviation routes around the world. Yeah. Remember that, that story? And one of the issues was...
That's a really funny review.
They accused Howard Hughes of not being able to deliver on a government contract, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the unfortunate thing is, in a time of crisis like what the world was, a lot of money will be made available for one specific goal. Not for industrialization, arts and culture, no. They just said we'll throw all money and effort and manpower and all expertise and knowledge, we'll throw it behind to find a vaccine. The Chinese did the same. The Chinese were obviously the first that rolled out a vaccine. Mm. But it was made the traditional way, meaning the traditional way you make a vaccine. The Russians then came up with Sputnik.
Yeah.
Also, made it around the traditional method of making a vaccine. Now, what I'm showing to you, Helmut, is that these guys responded in a time of crisis for their countries.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously also produced enough so that they could share with other developing nations around the world. And
Madagascar responded at the right time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then obviously AstraZeneca comes along from the UK. And what does Boris Johnson do? He says, nah. No, Europe had placed an order, ne? Europe had placed an order, but Europe also helped to develop the Pfizer vaccine.
Yeah.
Now, the Pfizer was a partnership between a German company and the American company Pfizer. AstraZeneca was a combination of a part of the British government, which is that university, and the Swedish company. These two vaccines pop up in the same week they get released. AstraZeneca and Pfizer. So, the EU guys heard...
Well, it was basically a vaccine race that time.
That's the same thing. You could look back to the First World War and the Second World War. They were arms races.
Yeah.
So, because it's a time of crisis.
Yeah.
So when you had to look at those particular two scenes, where was Africa in all this?
Oh, come on. Give us credit. Madagascar came through.
With a drinking concoction, Helmut. A drink... Okay, you're right. Madagascar took the limelight for that 3-month period in 2020. Literally to say, hey, you know what, guys? Come and drink this.
Madagascar didn't play. You needed a 2-liter. Yeah.
This herbal mouthwash situation. And what was it? It claimed the life of the
Have you seen that bottle?
Of the Tanzanian president, right?
Like, the Tanzanian?
Was it John Magufuli? Who was the guy that died?
That guy's death will take us to where did COVID-19 come from again.
But that was one of the reasons he passed away.
Yeah.
Because he also bought and he also promoted that Malagasy, concoction there in Tanzania locally.
The question I just kept asking is, look, you guys are going to hate me for this, but I have one question for witchcraft. Just there are two, after going through COVID-19 pandemic, I have two point of views on witchcraft. One, it's either it doesn't exist, or two, it's one of the most useless power under the sun.
Mm.
Because, well, if it's not coming through, if you can't use it in the event of an emergency, I'm going to have a serious problem with it. Yeah. Because that's when I'm like, So let me get this straight. You have this power that's so amazing, but you can only use it to witch your successful family members. The broke ones are life, and you wonder why poverty is not ending. See your life. But financing on the African continent is an overall problem on an AU level. And then, I feel like this is where countries like Namibia now, we don't give, not to boost up our ego, I feel like we don't give ourselves enough credit. Because if you look at the way that initiatives are being handled, in terms of, especially in terms of development, there are a lot of African countries that will basically come and tell you that, you have this, at least. Because where I'm coming from, forget having all this type of initiative. We don't even have peace. We have two generals that are using their separate division of militaries to blow each other up. So, and for these guys are spending pretty much every money that they're getting from any resources they can find in the country to buy more guns so they can fight for power.
Yeah.
Like, that's the situation we're dealing with. Now, for you and I that are now just, having a wonderful Monday, sitting in the studio, talking about, you know, on a continental level, health ministries coming together to talk about, how can we finance, our own health sector. And, the good thing is that it was actually nice to see AfriExim Bank there. And how the gentleman that was there to represent the South African, yeah, basically pointed out that we don't want another COVID-19 type of response that African countries did, which was zero. Yeah. So how can you then prepare for something like that? For one, you need a lot of research and development, which comes with a lot of money. And first of all, I think it's important to start from where are we in terms of, in terms of financing for health? Because we can't talk about, Africa Continental Free Trade Area. We'll start, let's build the infrastructure to trade with each other. You can't trade with each other if you're all dying of hunger or lack of medication.
True.
Yeah.
The obvious case there is also, Helmut, when you have to look at the occurrence, for example, of the developments that came through in the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
South Africa, and there was a South African company, there was a Kenyan company that both were on the verge, literally, of gaining access to the recipe for the COVID vaccine from one of the companies.
Yeah, which they did not like. First they said.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it was negotiated through World Health and the government of each country. And then the company, the American company, turns around and says, pay us this amount at least. First they said yes to free access to the recipe.
Yeah.
And when the South African company was this close to starting, the story then immediately changes in terms of saying, hey, listen, you know what, you guys or your governments or the AU or the World Health Organization all have to pay for this particular access, which was a dumb scenario. So in one part, Helmut, we were literally on the cusp of achieving something. And on the other side, it was literally sort of like, if I can use the word, sabotaged through capitalistic gain. But here's the thing. We should have obviously known nothing is for free. Especially when you deal with America. Nothing is for free.
Well, it's not just it's not just America. If you are looking at information that someone spent 20 years funding.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to. Well, I know I would not give it to you for free because that's a lot of money that was spent on there. For the expertise of the people that are conducting the research, the equipment they need, and. Now, after getting all this information, you just want me to hand it to you for free. No one does that. It's been done. I totally understand. It's very common in the history of the pharmaceutical industry, in the history of medicine. There are a lot of breakthroughs that have been made by specific individuals. Then they just decided to give the invention for free. The three pointer buckle, belt buckle, or not belt, seat belt, seat belt buckle. The three pointer seatbelt buckle, that was the safety and perfection of Volvo. They just decided, they can have it.
Yeah, because if it just came on, like, just across your waist.
That's
it
how
could
it was
cut
started.
You in half.
People kept biting the steering wheel.
Yeah. And if it, what was the other one? If it was a harness, what was the other seatbelt version they had? There was, I think, a triangular one. Yeah, before Volvo invented that three-point across your front way, across your front, your upper body.
Yeah, and yeah. Well, you basically have 2 points. One running. Is it horizontal? And you have one running diagonally from your shoulder all the way to
Which is the modern day seatbelt
because it covers both basically the waist and the upper body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they just, they just decided, but that was them. They just decided, okay, you know what? You can have it, but that should not be expected from someone that, you know, from anyone that spends millions of their dollars in the research and, you know, in research and development of, you know, of whatever it is they're developing.
Okay. I'll show you another twisted example.
Yeah, it's an, we were dealing with an emergency, but well, they had every reason to ask money because they invested a lot of money to get the information.
True, but it also shows in our scenario as Africans, the sector we did not spend money on.
Oh yeah.
The sector we did not empower.
Again, now, just wanted handovers. That's just not fair.
Now we've got three universities who are now doing their utmost best
to
try and literally upskill and capacitate Namibians in being, you know, in literally serving Namibia. But here's the thing, Helmut. When Namibia's economic planning had to start in 1995, or let's say at 1998 independence, when you open up a university in a newly independent country, here's the thing. Here's some of the core sectors that I always see correlating across the world when countries become independent. The core training skills, the skills that they look at, they always focus on VTC, on vocational. And then it's always on the other end of the other skills development scenario is always law, history, medicine, and engineering. It's not an emphasis on business admin, on advertising, on IT, on what's the other one's name? There's another obscure thing that for some other reason, media, unfortunately, they don't focus on those particular things first in terms of the skills development programs that they dispense through their universities.
Yeah.
They always start law, history, medicine, and medicine includes psychiatry and psychology and the aspects obviously of what did I mention? It was law, medicine, history, engineering and something else. And those guys are literally the bedrock. Only now, in the 20-teens, is Namibia's three universities now realizing, oh my goodness, we need to train our own medical staff. Why? Because for 20 years, we were too stupid to send, literally, Namibians that could study in South Africa. Hamoud.
Haven't people been going to study in Cuba or something?
Okay, that's doctors, South Africa, doctors.
Yeah.
We had to go and train people in Cuba, in Russia,
in Ukraine,
to be nurses and various kinds of nurses.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Where did you expect us to send them?
That just shows the African thinking, Hamoud. That's why I'm saying what so out loud. Mm. You know, my exacerbation.
Mm.
What, Helmut? What? When I enrolled for my first program, which was still Polytechnic, it was marketing. There was no medic school of medicine there, or medical faculty.
Doing medicine is one thing.
UNAM didn't have it,
huh?
IOM was still where IOM was there, in opposite Transnamib, but still at the single campus outlet there.
Yeah.
None of our three big institutions had as a cornerstone. This is a foundational faculty. None of these three institutions had this. Now, it has to show you, firstly, the political planning we had, the economic perspective to this political planning that we applied. And it also has to show you, literally, the planning in planning, you know, skills development in your country. What did we take serious? What did we take serious?
Aluta, continue. But, no, that we took serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But firstly, guys, we've got to take an ad break and come back right after this.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana kono nongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda do inawa nuneudo otukwetera o special angeta shake ngeje pa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu oma felane Eagle FM the eye
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
And as we come back there, dear listeners, obviously just before the break, in terms of just, you know, apologies for the extended break that we actually took there. Now, coming back from where we left off, the talking point that we've obviously looking at is that the African Union itself, plus also these, the specific, they call it a special technical committee meeting that obviously was conducted in last week. Now, obviously, at the heart of this discussion, they mentioned that this is for finance ministers and health ministers to actually work in tandem in terms of developing said particular adequate responses towards these needs that Africa have. And the conversation where Helmut and I actually left off is literally one that shouts volumes, firstly, in terms of how we need to approach. Now, Africa's obvious industrial needs is one of dire, what do they call that thing? I almost said it's in a dire state. Yeah. Africa's industrial response is technically in a dire response because we need to understand the level at which Africa is able to firstly have the skills and the people. And secondly, do we have the necessary industries that form a basis for us, for our response to technically respond in this scenario. This particular dimension has a peculiarity to it because this is actually where I wanted to also add in the interesting statistic statement a little bit earlier, Helmut, is that I looked at, World Bank data, but this is 2022 data, basically.
Yeah.
World Bank data in terms of the percentage to a country's GDP that each country in the world spends on their health sector. Do you know where Namibia finds itself, Helmut?
Uh-huh.
We find ourselves between the 9% and the 11% bracket of countries in the world that spend on their health sector. Do you know which other countries are in that same bracket?
It's a good thing, right?
Very good thing. You know why? Uh-huh. You find the likes of the Scandinavian countries. You find the likes of the UK, the US, Australia, you name it. You find those guys there. Which technically means Namibia has a pretty good record of taking its health sector serious. So in essence, you could see, you know, the expenditure is at least there. But here's the thing, Helmut. You then obviously need the necessary support mechanisms that help with this expenditure because you can't just say I'm spending money to say, hey, listen, I've appointed new nurses and staff and built the... Yes, those are also essential because technically health, the health sector, just like education, is a people-to-people, person-to-person, human-to-human sector that's greatly reliant. But before that, we take an ad break.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vinduk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vinduk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vinduk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. And we continue. And this is the part where I would say, Omran with Elmden Dwight, blah, blah, blah. But well, thanks to Dwight.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
You are now listening to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, weekdays from 4:30 to 6, only on Eagle FM. Download the app or tune in to a frequency near you.
Welcome back. We continue. So
just where I left off, the facilitating sectors that obviously come close to what a government spends by itself in the same sector would be obviously, Helmut, like your research and development, to aid with producing your own medicines and producing your own particular vaccines. Because in that scenario, yes, we do have one or two companies here in Namibia, but obviously the health sector itself has been obviously mired, or if I can say, bogged down by, you know, the specific reporting, which is all good regarding, you know, the kinds of procurement that took place back in last year and in the year before 2023 around not just condom supplies, but also medication supplies, with obviously the previous Minister of Health having to stand up multiple times in Parliament, responding to the particular question of in terms of what is actually considered to be, or what kind of conditions or what kind of products will be considered for special procurement that mm-hmm. can literally bypass normal procurement procedures.
AKA emergency procurement.
And then obviously you and I, we had the report that literally said that in that particular Auditor General's report that cited that some things were put on the special procurement zone or category that technically based upon the criteria of the same ministry did not meet the criteria or the criterion of being listed.
Of being categorized as emergency procurement.
As emergency procurement or special procurement. Yeah. For that matter. So we've also got those weird things to sort out in the public health sector. However, it does not say that there is a lack of funding to respond to the needs of the public health sector.
Yeah.
Because in many cases, the private health practitioners, they obviously should be registered with the Health Professionals Board or Health Professionals. It's known as the HPCNA. I know the acronym. I just don't know the full name.
HPCNA. Yeah, I know
Health
that.
Professions something of Namibia.
Yeah.
Health Professions Council, sorry.
And that thing is hidden.
No, it's not hidden. It's in the Ministry of Health.
You just don't know when they meet,
where they meet.
Wait, don't they, okay, don't they have an office like, just,
It's in the ministry. It's in the ministry.
There's a place, I think, is that.
Oh, do they have a literal office by themselves?
Yeah. Like, because I remember when I was looking for, I remember when I was sent to, you know, to go and ask for, the regional healer's license.
Why are you whispering? Ahmed, let's hear that again.
I was sent from one department to another. I went to the Ministry of Health. I was told, you know.
Yeah, because people were laughing like I was laughing.
Well, the lady at the, you know, the old
front
lady.
Desk,
yeah, the front desk was like, what? You look so young. Why do you want to be a witch? I was like, oh, come on. You're not helping. Yeah, and
look, I'm sorry, you know.
I
really can't take the South Africans serious now, because South Africans literally went and, what they call that? They literally classified that
I know
profession.
That,
they literally classified it to be a profession. Do you guys know that? In South Africa, they literally have traditional healers that are certified by the South African Ministry of Health. I laughed at the lady that I met there in Russia last year. I was like, what? I couldn't stop laughing. She was looking at me like, how could I laugh at her? I said, you are a what? No, I'm a certified Sangoma. I'm like, a what?
Some of these things will get me punched in the face.
A what? A certified what? Witch doctor? Really?
Look, herbalist.
Yeah.
I'm going to listen to that.
It's fine.
Yeah.
A herbalist. It's fine.
But
it's
abracadabra? Oh no, that's where you're gonna lose.
Because herbalists were the first formats of before you got the apothecary.
Yeah. Where you now have, is it a pharmacist?
Which now became your pharmacist.
Yeah.
That is fine, Helmut, because there's a clear line. And you still get makeshift herbal, you know, herbal peoples.
Yeah.
In our communities, wherever you go across the country.
Yeah.
They will tell you, drink this weird thing.
Yeah.
And then you feel a hangover tomorrow, like me. Like, what happened to me? I'm never again drinking. Never. Now that I know what the bus feels like when you wake up 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Never again. So, of course, you still get the herbalist situation.
Yeah.
In any society across the world, in the developing world. But if you come with, you know, unforced traditional healer or sang like in South Africa,
no, the abracadabra
Sangoma stuff.
Me.
No man, toch man, Helmut, ne man. So yes, you were still explaining. They were sending you from one port to the another port.
Yeah, they were sending. They were sending me from one port to another. Health Professionals Council. Yeah. Yep. There's it's it in Windhoek. Is it no? Is it There's this that's a different route. It's a kind of it's kind of tricky for me to describe. There we go. Yeah, that is where it's located. That's where I was sent. I had to look it up on Google Maps. Now
wait, the ministry is
central.
Where are we? Yeah. The ministry is there. The hospital.
Yeah.
Oh. It's in that other street. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, now I see. So it's a literal office.
They even have a giant, sign just in front of the, you know, just
there. I've driven past those guys accidentally many times.
Yeah, you must have.
That's why I still can't remember where they are. And they were the guys that literally, though, you remember those nursing students, those nursing and doctor students that came out of Ukraine and Russia who were told rewrite your exams. Rewrite many of your particular things because they didn't meet the basic requirements for me. Look, I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. But these are facts. I mean, you showed up.
Yeah, I remember reading that in a paper and I was like, okay, this is interesting. For me, it's a good thing that ministries of health met to talk about this. But whether you're talking about funding with regards to education on the African continent, or agriculture on the African continent, because food insecurity is a big problem for the most parts of the African continent, You think it's bad here. It's worse in a lot of African countries, especially those ones that are war-torn, because, well, it's basically difficult for you to farm and carry out statistics of which part of your country needs these resources more than the other if you have bombs exploding left, right, and center. Whether you're looking at funding from infrastructure development, health, agriculture, education, we keep coming back to the same problem. How do you generate this funding? Because it's very easy to say, okay, now from now on, it's very easy for the AU to come together, and say, from now on, every African country must spend at least 15 to 20% of their national budget on education. But what if you are not generating enough? You just don't have that money. You don't have that money as a country. We're going to get 15 to 20% of it, unless you go and borrow. Which again, if you borrow and use it in a way that it generates money back for you to be able to service the loan, that's fair. But if you borrow and chop the money, then you are now sitting with a much bigger problem because part of the problem when it comes to the finance discussion is how the debt to GDP ratio of African countries, so basically all developing countries, is now headed a very, it's headed in a very dangerous direction.
Mm.
Yeah, each and every year we are dedicating, the amount of money the amount of money being cut from the national budget to be dedicated to servicing debt,
yeah,
is increasing. Yeah. So the more that number increases, the more you now have to, to get slices from different ministries for you to make up for that increment every year. Because, well, the IMF is not going to be like, we're just going to give you, two more years. And no! First of all, you borrowed the money.
Mm.
Yeah. Just to honor your side of the agreement.
It is. Okay. The borrowing thing is a bit of a concern also, because it's in the price tag, obviously.
Yeah.
And as you and I obviously can see, this AFCFTA thing in terms of where they now want to help each other's economies and currencies develop resilience is also going to be difficult, Helmut, because here's the thing, we're still asking. I mean, the record was indicated last year where there was, what was it? Many economists were talking, yeah, the petrodollar and the dollar as the global trading currency would lose its value because of BRICS's particular policies and plans.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, 2024 was apparently the record in trading volumes by which countries literally selected the US dollar as the mainstay currency to trade with each other. And guess who was the biggest culprit of this resurgence? The developing countries. Even though we were now connecting more with each other,
mm-hmm,
we were now telling each other more, hey, you know what? We trust the US dollar.
So it's more of a situation of it's better the devil you know than the angel you don't know.
Exactly. So now we're sitting with an issue, Helmut. If you've got to look at the response by which the African Union has to show up in terms of developing in its own particular health sectors to the levels that you would find in Asia, in Europe, and in North America, and in some parts of Oceania, would be a scenario of how are you going to develop your sectors, meaning in what kind of monetary denomination? Are you going to apply it to your local currency, or are you going to apply it to a global currency? Because many of the things that you'll first need at the initial phases will be things that you import. So these would mean specific kinds of lab equipment.
Yeah.
These would mean specific kinds of hardware that you would need for, participating in research and development and literally in the production of the items. And a second scenario would obviously be, Helmut, did you know how critical these plastic things that you find anywhere in a health facility, like plastic pipes, tubes, all those things.
Like test tubes or something?
Test tubes, everything, anything plastic,
yeah,
made for the medical sector.
Yeah.
Do you know how critical is that manufacturing process?
No, it's just that. It was
And the metal utensils, like scalpels and all those other, yeah, things. That too, metal works for the health sector because it needs to be sterilized metal, stainless steel that you've got to use. Yeah.
There are specific health, health requirements you must meet.
Which is the easy part. I'm talking about the manufacturing part.
Oh yeah, that one is.
Firstly, the machines you will need, the expertise you will need to manage those machines, and then you obviously need to supply them. Now, firstly, where's the machine going to come from? Because the world's largest producer of medical equipment is India.
Yep.
Heineken's iconic balanced taste that gives you that refreshing first only made possible by Heineken's 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Look, when it comes to equipments, I think military equipments and pharmaceutical equipments are really expensive. I think throw in tech in that one, because tech is just because for tech it's not just expensive; it's also for the most part like cordon off in terms, in terms of intellectual property. But also intellectual property is one of those things that you have to deal with. Hence the COVID-19 example that we went through. First of all, the ingredients was of a vaccine. South Africa was like, we have everything. We basically have a stove, we have the pots, we have the spoons and everything. All we just need is the ingredients, then we can just cook it up here. The initial agreement was that it was like, okay, because we are dealing with a global emergency situation, we'll just give it to you for free.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they changed their mind, halfway through because, well, again, it's not rocket science. 20 years of research.
No, it's not.
It's not.
Okay, it might be for you and me, Helmut, because, I can only deal with basic English. Ensuring, basic instructions and stuff like that. But before we continue, guys, we're going to take a short ad break and come back right after this. Namibia, are you ready to win big? Coca-Cola is giving away up to 1 million Namibian dollars in prizes. Every week, one lucky winner walks away with $10,000 cash. All you have to do is grab your favorite Coke, Fanta, Sprite, Stony, or Twist in 2-liter, 1.25-liter, or 600ml bottles. Look under the yellow cap, dial *142*458#. Punch in your code, follow the prompts to enter, and just like that, you could be our next big winner. Refresh, enjoy, and win with Coca-Cola. T's and C's applies. Go to the Coca-Cola social media pages to watch the video on how to enter the competition. Davicha University, where 2026 applications are now open for the Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education. The following programs are Diploma in Legal Studies, Legal Level 6, Bachelor of Laws Honours, Bachelor of Science in Project Management Honours, Bachelor of Supply Chain Management Honours, Bachelor of Education in Senior Primary Education Honours, which is also Math and Science for Grade 4 to 7, Bachelor of Education in Secondary Education Honours, Math and Science for Grades 8 to 12. Application fee is $230 Namibian. Application deadline is 30 November 2025. How to apply? All applications can be done online on our website at www.wuat.edu.na. The application fee for all courses will be $230 Namibian. Payments can be done at the bank, EFT, or swiping at our campuses. The proof of payment must be uploaded on the application form along with all other relevant documents. No ATM deposit receipts, meaning proof of payments, will be accepted. All foreign qualifications must be accompanied by an NQA evaluation report or certificate. For more information, please call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462. Davicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
We continue. So we're still with financing for the health sector, continental wise. Now the thing is, when it comes, to deciding how much can one country, I can only imagine how difficult that is to determine, and I don't think it can be a one size fits all, like pretty much the same way that we look at the energy transition discussion. It's not a one-size-fits-all scenario that you have to just, draft up and then give to every country to go and apply in their respective countries, because things may be different. Now, when it comes to the discussion that was held in Joburg, last week, it's also important to realize that it's not a one size fits all that you have to draft. It's not a one formula that you have to just, cook up with like Donald Trump's tariff formula and then give it to all the countries to go and apply. Obviously, what may work for Botswana may not work for Namibia. So the most important thing, I think, then comes to figuring out, draft up more of a template, and then which will now be adopted by every country.
Mm.
But although for the most part during the discussion, especially on the first day, what they focused on was mostly the challenges. They really zoned on that one, on the challenges.
It's almost like they were trying to relive trauma. I mean, the whole discussion was just, yeah, I've got trauma to share. Yes, I've got trauma to share. I was like, what is wrong with these guys? None of them are saying, okay, so this is what we're going to do. This is the plan. This is the initiative. Well, that's probably also why day two existed, you know.
Yeah. No, because, on the 8th STC meeting, The gentleman representing the Afri Exim Bank pointed out that a strong health institution is not only a moral imperative, it's also an economic necessity and a cornerstone for resilience and a prerequisite for Africa's demographic dividend. Now, there was a part where he referenced the mortality rate being high in Africa. Child mortality rate being high in Africa than a lot of other parts of the continent.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, that's an interest, which I found interesting because, the thing is, also, there are more people on the African continent giving birth than most parts of the world. Because a lot of developed countries are in a population, nosedive. A lot of people are deciding not to have kids.
Mm.
Yeah. So that, and now that to me kind of makes sense because, if you have two regions, one has a high birth rate and the other has low birth rate. The one that's going to have a high birth rate is obviously going to have, a relatively high child mortality rate.
Mm.
Yeah. Compared to the one that has low birth rate. Just like, you're the rich guy, I'll just listen to you.
But usually the fears is also born out of the environmental and the national circumstances, for example, like you cited.
Yeah.
The one with the high birth rate obviously has, obviously got certain precarious conditions. Which speaks to even infant mortality for that matter.
That's the word that was used.
Infant mortality. Then you've also got the threats to the mother's safety, to women's safety.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like environmental threats, like also being susceptible to other kinds of diseases and other kinds of things. And obviously those are the particular concerns that still persist on the continent versus other parts of the world. A great concern of that obviously has been, Helmut, that if I shared with you that same statistic ranking from the World Bank, you could immediately see, that Africa is like, Namibia is like one of the sort of like, if in Afrikaans we had the word uitblinker, almost like we stand out kind of a status in terms of the amount of spending we apply to our health sector.
Yeah.
But when you look at the African average for spending or the sub-Saharan African spending average is at the 5% mark. So that brings the efforts that Namibia has positioned itself with. It brings it literally down to the 5% mark because everyone else is making us look bad. Because if you take that whole lumping average together, it technically means that Namibia is also part of that cluster, even though Namibia is literally in its own right
He's doing fairly well in a trailblazer.
Yeah, we're a trailblazer by our own right because we've recognized. And obviously, for those who love talking about the USAID cuts that Donald Trump implemented, there's a USAID internet resource that shows you just what the USAID was meant for in Namibia. And that was predominantly for women and child support programs affiliated to HIV AIDS programs. HIV/AIDS prevention programs, HIV/AIDS support programs, and it was obviously a lot of money coming through from the US in that scenario,
yeah.
And the United States has helped Namibia greatly in combating HIV/AIDS spread,
yeah.
And the spread of it, but there was also a lot of misinformation, specifically from media practitioners, around USAID projects in Namibia. For example, that it was predominantly for the, for LGBTQ plus programs in Namibia, which you would also frown upon because to great length, the resource would tell you, but Namibia's programs were just strictly in the realm of HIV/AIDS prevention, as well as also other affiliated and support programs in that same specific niche program.
Yeah, I watched that Congress hearing.
No, not the Congress hearing. Show. Helmut, I'm talking about here in Namibia now.
Oh, really?
After the Congress hearing was taking place.
Yeah.
There were literally media practitioners in Namibia stoking the fires of misinformation. Now, you would always hear in any media class, yeah, if there's smoke, there's a fire. Duh. Yeah. If there's smoke, there's a fire. But in many cases, it's not the fire that you're looking for. Because what was the aim of why Trump brought in, what's his name? Musk. Just because Musk kept talking
with his Dodge program.
Yeah, because Musk spoke of a misallocation of adequate financing for the rest of the world, but Americans weren't benefiting. Meaning,
Their money, their tax dollars were funding projects across the planet.
In other countries, yeah. And not them internally in their federal states, in their states, in the US. Which was a very good, I mean, it's the same thing that Namibia has. Namibia is looking internally first to look after its citizens as opposed to anywhere else. So obviously it was a clear cut response.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yes. And obviously, yes, Musk did bring up a lot of things. But here's what many people also forget about Elon Musk. Elon Musk also likes promoting and propagating a lot of misinformation.
Yep.
You guys should have seen, he's the actual reason as to why Donald Trump had that falling out with Ramaphosa in the White House.
Yeah.
In the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Where Ramaphosa didn't understand this humiliation that was technically taking place, and Donald Trump felt now, he was sort of like now the custodian of, you know, of...
running the show.
Of white South Africans, and for some reason, I don't know who gave him that honor as well. Later on, where the, what was the guy's name from the DA? John Steenhuisen had to literally come in and defend South Africa in the same spot by telling, hey, listen, guys, you guys were believing nonsense and misinformation from other people, which was the truth. John Steenhuisen, Helmut, just has a matric. Do you know that?
Yeah.
And he literally had to stand.
A lot of content was created on him, just based on that.
About the matric.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Malema, what was it? Malema and the other political guys were like, yeah, who allows such a guy? But you know what? At least he makes sense. When the guy opens his mouth, he makes sense. Okay. In limited proportions, shall I say. Don't worry, guys. I'm not advocating here for South African politics because in many cases, you know, King Palapala also makes sense, you know, South African President Ramaphosa.
Palapala Bank.
Yeah, he also makes sense. Obviously, the biggest thing that only hangs over his head is obviously the Marikana massacre. Why do I say that? Because obviously, it is proven that he is a stakeholder, or he was a stakeholder of the mine at the time that the massacre occurred. And in many cases, the journalists in South Africa were trying to pin the fault squarely on him. He was only a board member. Even though they've got an email that says, where he supposedly said, yeah, he, he apparently gave the order, which was not a clear indication of an order being given to shoot at miners armed with assegais and spears and clubs, which I am still trying to understand in this modern day and age. Who protests with handheld weapons? But yeah, South Africa.
Yes.
It's South Africa.
Mkonto wasizwe.
Mkonto. Mkonto.
Mkonto.
No, T, not D.
Really?
Yeah.
Mkonto.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-uh. Count me out of that one.
I don't know what you said with Mkondlo.
Mkondlo.
I don't know why you put in an L, a D, an L and a D there.
There's a South African rolling right now on the floor.
These two guys.
Yeah.
Mispronouncing South African words here.
Yeah, I went to school with a guy who could not say South Africa. He kept saying South Africa. South Africa.
He swapped his S and his TH. Uh-huh. Almut, please.
We had a good time.
Please don't bring up those memories of me laughing in grade 3 at my classmates in Rehoboth who kept saying, I think.
I think.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm sorry for my former Rehoboth, friends and stuff like that.
I've heard that before, I swear.
I think. Woof. They don't say woof. They say woof.
Woof.
What are you saying, bro?
Your native language is molds your tongue in a certain way that to learn a new language requires a whole new mental and tongue gymnastics.
Helmut, it's so easy to identify someone who speaks Afrikaans.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I've just trained my ear that way because it's usually how you speak Afrikaans is also how you speak your English, because a lot of the British people, they confuse me for being South African. Because there is a South African accent.
Oh.
Which is technically also you find in Namibia. And even in Zambia. And even in Botswana and Zimbabwe. It's a Southern African accent. Yeah, it has a homogeneity to it. As opposed to a... an Afrikaans accent. And you know what's the weirdest thing? The guy from Afri-Exim Bank that was speaking was South African. I just had to read his name like 5 times to say, are we sure? I just had to, but this guy is a South African.
Afri-Exim Bank.
Was it Dudu Aya or Aya? Something was the guy's name. But anyway, yeah.
I'm going to attempt those names.
So yeah. So the concern obviously from this engagement was that they were all, as if they were sitting in an AA meeting. And I'm literally talking about an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting.
My name is Namibia.
I am Afri-Exim Bank. Yes, I am. What was the other organization sitting there as well? The UN Economic Commission. What was that? UNECA?
There was Dr. Hanan Morsi, Deputy Executive Secretary of United Nations Economic
Commission for Africa.
UNECA.
And they were all sitting I'm sitting here also. And everyone is just talking about we shouldn't have the same responses like we had in COVID.
Yeah.
Things should not repeat itself.
But
they're not saying what we should do.
The whole thing comes down to one thing, which is very simple. The problem that we are having here about health is the one that we are talking about. This is the problem we have about education, the problem we have about silencing of the guns. Part of the biggest problem was the financing aspect of it, which is why the whole thing fell on its face. And now we're on health. But the bottom line is, overall, African Union itself, most of its funding is coming from donor funding.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is not a very good, which is not a very good, a very good picture not just because it creates dependency, but also it speaks a lot to security issues, like like Dr. Mossi pointed out, that it also it's also a national security aspect. If someone is financing you, they will require access to a lot of information that you makes one traverse between between honoring their their side of the agreement to basically putting the security of their country at risk. And we and all this is happening while we're in the middle of discussing why we have a bunch of foreign military installations all across the continent. But the point is that was also one thing that was also pointed out when it comes to military installations across the African continent is that these military installations are based on someone renting that piece of property, aka the land, and they are paying very good money for it. So who wouldn't say yes to just please set up your structure here so you can be paying me these millions per year? Well,
you're still talking about the funding thing for AU, Helmut, which also shows the, is it the uncertain grounds the continental body is based on? Because if Namibia has the same,
Dwight, the headquarter was donated.
I know the headquarter was donated. That's why I'm pointing to the fragility of our ability.
You are getting married and then someone else will buy for you a house.
No.
And then they
I'm getting married, but everything was sponsored by someone else. Even my bride's dress. Even,
and you wonder why they keep
even
going.
Even the suit I'm wearing and even the ring I have got to put on her hand.
And you wonder why I keep, why they keep going with your wife on holiday.
With me. But I'm sitting in economy class.
Yeah, economy class. Yeah, in first class.
That's a bad example, Helmut. I'm now even feeling bad for that example.
That's us, dude.
I know that's us.
That's us.
But there's like five guys, ne?
Yeah. That's us, including...
that paid for the wedding. Five guys that paid for the wedding, ne?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I just had to make it a lot worse.
Yeah, congratulations. You win.
Yeah. So yeah, David is chasing us out here while we're doing wedding comparisons. Just so that you know, dear listeners, same time, same place again tomorrow here on The Home Run. And stay tuned for the Business and Economics segment.
Yeah, boy.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Great news! Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chumbi, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook, and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Shombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM,
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Siwana sana Namibia. Kamberera omwakarunga koe pamwe na Imba. Inokara uri kwanima yesiga. Endera pamwe nethimbo muyuni wa technology. Imonena embiro joemwene kongozi.
Happy Juju, how are you? What are you doing? Why are you not picking up my phone?
Well, David Chombe, I'm just scrolling through my phone, going through my WhatsApp, my Facebook, and all that.
Serious, what's the time now?
Wait, it's almost 1800 hours! I need to tune into Eagle FM! Business Economic Segment is about to play now!
Yes, listen to Business and Economic Segment with David Chombe from 1800 hours to 1900 hours when we talk about business, economics, trade, and current affairs. Do not miss out if you want to learn and move forward with economic advancement.
Eagle FM, the eye.